Mary Lou Tyler, Predictable Prospecting. Today's guest is a gentleman who I followed for quite a long time. He's the CEO and founder of a company called Sales Gravy. You probably know him from the 7+ books he's generated and sold on Amazon and elsewhere. His name is Jeb Blount. Is that proper?
Blunt.
Blunt. Yeah. Jeb Blunt.
That's okay. You're a Yankee. It's not your fault.
There you go. His most recent book, Fanatical Prospecting, really caught my eyes, obviously because I'm really focused on top of funnel prospecting and outreach channel. But his unique approach, I think, is amazingly simple, concise, and impactful. So I really wanted him, and I'm so glad that I was able to catch him between all of his engagements, to talk to us today about what his top learnings are that he can share with you and things that have happened to him since he launched this last book. And then just overall, in the 10 years he's been doing this, running around, what's changed? What's the same? What are the issues that he can share with us so that when we stop listening to this phone call, this video call, that we'll put everything that we just learned into action right away. So welcome, Jeb. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so glad to be on. I know we've tried so hard to make this happen between everything that's been going on. I've been in Asia and traveling. So it's fantastic that we finally have a chance to do this together.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I think the last time it was me, I had knee surgery. So crazy stuff, but you're here now. So tell us about you.
I'm a trainer, a speaker, an entrepreneur, a CEO. I've got an entire sales team right over in the other building. I'm sitting in Sales Gravy Studios right now, but we have an entire inside sales team. We have an outside sales team. We sell both employment advertising. A lot of people don't recognize it. SalesGravy.com is the largest employment advertising website on the internet. But we're also a training and development company, and we own several other companies that are in that space. We own a company called Channel EQ that's in the indirect sales space and the channel space. So between that and elite coaching and the training programs that we build and create for our clients, I mean, we're pretty busy people. So when we talk about prospecting, I have to wake up every single day. Before we got on the phone, I walked through my sales floor, give everybody high fives, talk to them, because what are they doing? Everybody in there is on the telephone prospecting, everybody.
Right. It's funny because you mentioned the word telephone. One of the hardest things that I'm discovering is getting the younger crowd used to using the phone. And email, the Predictable Revenue book that Aaron and I co-authored in 2011, really focused on the email engine. And I think to a disservice, it made it seem as if you really didn't need to pick up the phone until someone engaged. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let me give you a quick stat.
Okay.
So we've been tracking this since March of last year. So we've gone all the way in. We're about, 14 months in. So I guess 15 months in on this. Just a basic experience. I'm a CEO of a company that spends not a huge amount of money, but we spend close to about $650,000 a year with vendors who provide services for us. And some of the vendors are as simple as the U.S. Post Office. Some of them are software as a service vendors. Some of them are people who clean our office, but a significant amount of money. So I'm a pretty good prospect for a lot of salespeople. And I'm the person in my company that generally is the person that's going to say yes or no. I'm not always the decision maker, but I'm the person that in a lot of cases has the ability to fund it. And I'll give you an example of that. Yesterday, my vice president of business development said yes to a one-year contract with a company that was going to help us do a little bit better job of scrubbing our database. Mm. And he said yes. He signed the contract. I said no, because I'm not willing to pay for it. So he had the authority to say yes to the contract. I have the authority to say yes or no. So I'm a pretty good target. Now, I just want you to think about this for a second. It's been 15 months now?
Right.
Over a 15-month period, I am now up to 2,373, as of yesterday, because we count every one of them, emails, prospecting emails.
Wow.
I've received 4 phone calls.
Oh, my God. Okay.
My fourth phone call was yesterday. Right. It's a gentleman named Chris. He sells software as a service, and he called my line. I answer my phone. If I'm in the office, I'm around, right. I answer my phone. He called into our offices. Our phone number is on our website. It's not like it's that hard. You call into the phone tree, you ask for me, and I answered my phone. And his call was terrible. I coached him on it. I worked him on it because the first thing he asked me was how I was doing. And I explained to him that I was doing really good before he interrupted my day, not to ask that stupid question. So we worked through some things. But he called me. And because he called me, we're having a conversation about his software. Mm-hmm. In fact, of the four phone calls that I've received, three of those companies are currently doing business with my company, just to give you an idea.
Right.
And one of those guys, a guy named Luke Rivers, Luke, if you're listening, you know this is true, that he called me out of the blue and on a cold call because he listened to one of my podcasts. And I answered the phone. He goes, I didn't think you were going to actually answer the phone. So, but I've ended up referring him to a bunch of other people because he's a really good sales representative. He's a great account manager and he takes care of me. But here's the thing. The kid that called me yesterday, if he had sent me an email, he would not have gotten a response because I don't respond to prospecting emails anymore. I'm tired of them. I'm done with them. Mm-hmm. They're driving me nuts. Most of them suck. Most of them have no relevance to me. And most of them are nowhere being sent by robots. And I explained this to a group of reps the other day ago. If your entire prospecting mechanism is just to send emails, I can fire every single one of you because I can get a robot that can do this for me. I don't need you to send emails. And this is true. In our company, we have three different email engines and we use email as a prospecting mechanism. If you read Fanatical Prospecting, you know I believe in a balanced approach. I don't believe in one single approach. So we use all those things. I don't need human beings to do that. I can have one person that can run every email program that we have. Mm-hmm. So reps that are concentrating and focusing on email are doing themselves and their companies a major disservice, and they're sub-optimizing, you know, their results because the phone is, it will always be, it will continue to be the most powerful tool that you have in your sales arsenal. Because especially if you're an inside sales rep, and that's what you and Aaron wrote your book about, Predictable Revenue. But if you're an inside sales rep, it's the one place where you can actually have a conversation. That kid that called me yesterday, his call was horrible. He got an A+ for picking up the telephone, which is why I gave him a chance.
Right.
And but he and I are at least having a conversation now because he was cool. I mean, he took the coaching and was appreciative of it. Yeah. That made me feel good. So we have a relationship now. He sent me a text message this morning. Now think about that. He used the phone. He used text message. He sent me an email with a follow-up demo that I could watch. Mm-hmm. He's used all of the prospecting mechanisms at his disposal.
Right.
And that's the real key. That's what I mean by balanced prospecting. Use all the channels.
Right, right. And it's such a disservice to continually slam people with the same message and think that because you've done it 5, 10, 15 times that they're going to, for some reason, change their mind. It's just wild. I had an email stream sent to me by a client the other day where it was a company out of San Francisco, and they basically sent one email and then had, I think, 8 in-thread replies like, did you get my email? Hey, did you get my email? Hey, did you get my email? And it was like, what are you thinking? Why do you think this works?
So because I want you to think about this for a second. So people who are watching this, think about the psychology of this. By the way, it's the same thing with voicemail. Mm-hmm. You don't leave a voicemail and then leave another voicemail and say, hey, I left you a voicemail yesterday. You didn't call me back.
Right.
If you and you know how it feels that when you got that next email that says, hey, why didn't you reply to my email? Or I sent you an email. You must not have gotten it. I get these things all the time. And I don't know who's teaching this crap. Whoever is teaching this crap, stop. You're killing brands.
Right.
You're killing brands. It makes you feel like the company that's sending it to you sucks. So just think about this for a second. When you got that, at the subconscious level, you felt bad. It made you feel bad because the person was calling you out and saying, you didn't respond to my email.
Right.
Now, I want you to pay attention to this, people who are listening. It's a really, really, really stupid way to start off a relationship, calling your prospect a schmuck. So stop doing that. I've been teaching this since the 90s. You leave a voicemail and you got to leave another voicemail and you got to leave a voicemail. I get persistence. Persistence always wins. I get that. But if you leave a voicemail, you leave the exact same voicemail every single day. You leave it because you're being persistent. But if you call up and say, oh, I called you yesterday, or hey, I'm calling you again, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing this, if you do that, now that doesn't mean you can't leave a series of voicemails that have a different message on them. But if you start leaving voicemails that say, I called you before, I called you before, I called you before, trust me, the prospect gets madder and madder and madder at you. And the same thing happens on email. And I was on this rant the other day ago in front of a group of CEOs, and the room exploded. They're all like, I'm getting hammered by all of these stupid salespeople who were sending me emails telling me that I didn't respond to their email.
Right.
They're not getting any value. They're not giving me any relevance. They're not doing anything that makes sense to me. And I'll give you one that's even more moronic. I mean, this is moronic. You're a company and you sell telephone prospecting services. We'll do your cold calling for you. We pick up the phone and call and engage prospects. And the way that you prospect to me is via email. How does that help your credibility as a company?
Right.
I promise you, zero. Because it tells me that you're not going to call anybody. All you're going to do is send emails and then send me crappy leads that no one is ever going to respond to.
Right, definitely. The other thing, too, about voicemail, if I'd like to go back to that, is how do you feel about direct and indirect influencers when you're actually working on a calling campaign and you have your bullseye, your target, the person that you want in the middle of the bullseye, but then the next ring out, you'll have direct, what I call direct influencers, people who have the prospect's ear, or at least they value them at a peer level. And then you have the third ring, which is indirect people, like perhaps colleagues or people in other divisions if you're selling up market companies. How do you feel about the voicemail engine using that to do what I call intraday calling in and around the ring?
I personally, that's exactly how I approach it. I mean,
okay.
If you've got a complex account, I mean, if you're selling something that's really transactional,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that really makes a lot of sense. I mean, if it's a one call close,
right.
Calling an influencer is probably not going to do a lot of good because they're not going to be able to make a decision, and you're just going to prolong your pain. But I'll give you a great real life example. One of my clients sells enterprise level software, and these are big spends. So we're talking about anywhere from $500,000 to $5 million software purchases. And because they're at the enterprise level, basically when the company gets their client to sign up, they're getting married for life. I mean, this isn't something that they're going to shift out of, because the risk of getting into it and the risk of getting out of it is just so high.
Mm-hmm.
So for quite some time, they were going after a market of companies that weren't actually using the software. So they were taking a green field and converting them into this particular type of software. And that was a pretty easy sell. I mean, you had status quo the way we've been doing it, but you also had a lot of market forces that were creating a situation where these companies really had to start making some decisions about how they were going to be managing their data. But that market began to tap out. They had a very pretty limited market of companies that would be eligible for this type of software. So they had a few competitors, and once they took out the greenfield market, they had to start going after competitive accounts. So they had to go start chasing businesses. And because this type of software is a long, long-term investment, that's a much harder nut to crack.
Right.
So what we sat down with them and built was a strategy that exactly what you described. The strategy was, we need to find the people who are actually using the software, the competitor software. We know that there are problems there, and we know there's dissatisfaction. We have to leverage that group up in the channel to start really pushing the people above them to push the ultimate decision makers, because in this case, the software spin was so big, it would be a CIO, CFO, CEO, sort of a joint decision. And these decisions generally had to go to the board. So you had to get those folks in your camp willing to go to the board with a recommendation to make a change out of their software. There was no way you were going to make that happen just by calling into the CEO's office and chatting for a few minutes. You had to get an entire group of people around you working up the channel. And as you said, there were some people that were more separated from it, users, people who were had influence but had no real ability to make any decisions at all.
Right.
And then you had people above them who were feeling that level of pain, who could push the people above them, who had a lot more influence. And so what they focused on was building out that coalition of people. And a lot of that was around a voicemail campaign. And by the way, I think this is important for voicemail. Voicemail is not just a, you know, I leave you a message, do you call me back? But it's also marketing. If you have a really good voicemail message, you begin to create familiarity. What happens is you begin to help people move into your familiarity bubble so they know who you are, what your company is about. And like you said, it's a campaign over time. That increases the probability that when a buying window opens, when there's a trigger event, when there's a place where there's some level of dissatisfaction with their current situation, that they'll either take your call or they'll respond to your call or email or what have you at that moment. And I think that we can't ever forget that. Now, to run these type of campaigns, you have to be able to manage your database in the way that you can segment your database out. You can run these campaigns against the right prospects. And also, I think you've got to make sure, because voicemail is very time intensive, that you are blocking your time appropriately for that. And for example, what we do is we do our voicemail campaigns at the end of the day when our probability of actually getting a live person on the phone diminishes. We do voicemails in the afternoon because voicemail can be answered anytime.
Right.
So and then we do our core calling campaigns generally first thing in the morning. We sit down, everybody's got a list in front of them, you know, calling campaigns, then social, then email, and then email we can schedule. And typically run our email campaigns, schedule them for 8 o'clock in the morning. So as soon as the email hits, we're watching all the people that are opening the email up, and then that triggers our phone calls out to them. And we've seen an explosion of productivity and getting people on the phone because they answer the email. They're typically at their office. They show some level of interest. Mm-hmm. We can get them on the phone and typically convert them into a sale. Again, my business from an advertising standpoint is a little bit transactional. So right. The person that gets the email, that's our decision maker, and we need to get them closed on that particular call. Right. I know that was a long explanation, but I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, one of the things that we work with clients, and I just specialize really at three stages of the pipeline, I like to call it, which is the cold initial conversation to qualified opportunity. That is my area of expertise. But within that area, we do exactly what you're talking about. We call it cadence, where we actually blend in the phone with email. We look for first response rates, because all of our emails are persuasive copy. They're looking for a call to action. They're adding value, but they're also asking for something in return. Very simple things, but we're looking for response rates. We follow up with those. We embed click-through content in some of the emails. We follow up on those with telephone campaigns. So then we know the pain point that has resonated with that person. So we try to do that in a systematic way at the top of the funnel so that we can build multiple engines. The while you're sleeping engine, I call that, is the email only engine. And then we blend the intraday calling, like we talked about before, for those accounts that have those 5.4 people that ebb and flow throughout the sales cycle that we need to talk to. So I think, you know, your definitions are great. I mean, it does depend on exactly how many people are going to be introduced at certain stages of the pipeline. But for the most part, a lot of the clients that I work with, they have at least three people that are ebbing and flowing somehow through the initial stages of the pipeline, either to start conversation, to continue conversation, or to get through the discovery sequences so that they can create a qualified opportunity. So I know there are people now who are driving along listening to this thinking, oh, this really sounds great. I'm not sure where to deploy what Jeb is talking about. So when you come in and work with a client, are you specializing from initial conversation all the way to close won, close lost? Are there certain segments of the pipeline that you specialize in? Or do you look holistically at the entire pipeline with clients and then start attacking certain areas? What's your preferred way of working with clients?
We're more of a holistic firm in that we work with companies all over the globe. So we don't walk in with a preconceived notion of what we do, and we don't specialize in any particular part of the pipe, nor are we specializing in any particular industry. As a rule, for the last 10 years, we've been industry agnostic, and it's been a huge boom for us because we're able to find that there are a lot of commonalities and a lot of patterns that companies are facing. And so we're able to bring best practices from one industry or one company to the next. And we've seen some just explosive growth rates. I mean, for example, one of my clients is in capital equipment. They were a $45 million company 2.5 years ago. They're a $100 million company today.
Wow.
And we were able to work with them on improving their inside sales team, but at the same time working with a mashup between inside and outside sales. And this is a company that pulled all of their people inside and then recognized that it was killing them in the marketplace because their clients no longer had the relationship that they counted on, and their competitors started cleaning their clock. And I've had at least 10 or 11 clients over the last 2 years that have been redeploying an outside sales team because it makes sense for them to do that. But we've been able to mash these things up. So we're getting the most productivity out of every single channel. So we are an organization that sits down with our client. We spend time with them. We try to understand where the touch points are, where the levers are that will allow us to get them the highest productivity or the highest performance in the shortest amount of time. And typically what we find is a lot of times it's things that are really, really small. And that are holding companies back, especially emerging companies. But we work with companies that are in the Fortune 100 to emerging. You know, I've got a client that's $5 million. And that's what's beautiful about not locking yourself into a particular space. It's a little bit harder for us sometimes to explain to companies that, no, we don't just do one thing. And you know, you have to trust us that we're really good at what we do.
Right.
But on the other hand, there's never a dull day. We've got, you know, training programs that go all the way from top of the funnel all the way to the end of the funnel. And we're able to apply things like cadence, like you described, in the appropriate way for every client, because every customer is different. Every industry is different. Every company is different. And, you know, that your prospect is different. So if you don't leverage things the right way, you lose. And if you read Fanatical Prospecting, I'm clear about that. I don't believe that there's one way. I don't believe that there's a one-size-fits-all approach. I mean, I believe in basic principles. Like I believe that if you call your prospect a schmuck, they're not going to want to have anything to do with you. I believe that if you're more familiar to them, which is both a marketing and sales function, they're going to be a high probability that when there's a buying window, that it's going to open to you.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that you have to prospect relentlessly every single day, because the number one reason for failure in sales is an empty pipe. And the number one reason there's an empty pipe is because salespeople fail to prospect. I believe that if you use robots to prospect all the time, then you're going to sub-optimize your sales, because sales in and of itself is an emotional endeavor. And until we can find robots that can be human, it's going to be that way. Now, there are certain transactional sales in the marketplace that, you know, for example, if you want to buy something off of Amazon, the experience is so good that I really don't need to talk to a salesperson in order to go buy toilet paper. I get that. But as we begin getting more complex, buyers are asking, and you know, you use the 5.4 thing, which is one of those, in my opinion, this is my opinion only, it's a ridiculous stat that came out of CEB, and because there's not 0.4 of a person. I think that, you know, the reality is that that some companies, there are a lot of people making decisions, and some companies, there's one person making a decision.
Right.
And there's not a pattern that's just emerged where you have a group of people making decisions. In the early 90s, when I was selling, I mean, I would sit down with committees of people on a regular basis and sell to them. Sometimes it were 10 people, sometimes it were 5 people. So to think that all of a sudden that changed in the world, it's just not true. The reality is that people are less risk averse, or more risk averse than they were before the recession. And so what's happening is that people are less likely to make a decision just on their own because they want to go check with someone else because they feel a risk. And so as a salesperson, that's an emotional issue, not a 5.4 people issue.
Mm-hmm.
So as you described, if I can go in and start using a campaign to reach into organizations and build relationships across the organization, some of those relationships are really shallow. Some of them will be deep that will help me build a coach or really tap into influencers. Then do I give myself a higher probability of closing the deal? Absolutely.
Right.
You know, and that's the real message here versus, you know, saying, oh, the buyer has changed, or oh, these things have changed, because I just don't buy into it. I don't believe there's an old school or a new school. I believe there is the school of selling. And if you look, and everybody who's listening to this, if you search your heart and look at the top salespeople in your organization, they are doing things that the top salespeople in the organization were doing in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
They are relentless. They are persistent. They have a great mindset. They're mentally tough. They ask great questions. They build relationships. They recognize that interpersonal skills, the ability to manage their own emotions, and intrapersonal skills, managing the emotions of other people, are absolutely critical to their success. And they are adaptive and they're flexible. And as you know, new technology and new ways of connecting with prospects have emerged, they've adopted those and they've built them into their entire system. So they become more powerful. And this, you know, is to me like the greatest fallacy in sales right now is that sales is harder than it's ever been, which is complete BS. Mm-hmm. Sales is easier than it's ever been. I worked when sales was hard. Sales was hard when there was a phone book. Sales was hard when there was no CRM. Sales was hard when, you know, my CRM was a stack of business cards. That was when
Rolodex.
Sales was tough.
I had a Rolodex.
Today, I mean, we're talking about, I can sit an engine overnight. We use a company called Tailwise that we really love. We sit an engine overnight. We send out emails at 8 o'clock in the morning. The emails hit. People open them up. We attach documents that they can look at, but when they look them, we use proactive chat to engage them in a conversation with us and get them on the telephone. We have a telephone system that when I'm in Asia, I'm able to take a call and transfer it to somebody in my office from Asia. I can do video calls. I mean, Lord have mercy, it's easier than it has ever been before. Yet, and I'm going to give you, I'm going to shut up, I'm going to get off my rant, but here's the deal. Yet, just the other day ago in one of our sales trainings, I was sitting there looking at three 20-somethings who were on the front of them. We were doing a prospecting block because we do live phone blocks in our Fanatical Prospecting boot camps. Mm-hmm. Had a stack of business cards in front of them, dialing off the stack of business cards. And my mouth is open. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me.
Right.
That's how you go about organizing your day. So, you know, don't tell me about millennials and how good they are with technology, because they're really not that smart with technology. You know, they'll adapt it faster than other people, but they're not that smart. And don't tell me that there's some new school or old school. And please don't tell me that everything has changed in sales, because it hasn't. It just hasn't.
Amen to that. And I think a lot of it is, there's this difference of leveraging technology and hiding behind technology. And what we really need to embrace as a community is that we can leverage technology where it makes sense to help us create better consistency in our work habits. And in my area of expertise at the top of the pipeline, it's all about habit. You know, it's really that consistency. You mentioned persistence. Aaron used to call me patiently persistent Mary Lou, because I would be patient but yet persistent in my sales conversations. So I agree. I mean, I think we have a lot of work to do ahead of us because of this, you know, just thought process of the younger, or just sales reps in general, that, you know, the things have changed that much. And now there are some behavioral things. I will admit to that. My kids, you know, with the swipe left, swipe right thing, I mean, their attention span is a little bit shorter. So you have to kind of break through the clutter a bit. But all that means, Jeb, is that you really need to think through, what is my value? What value do I bring to the table? And when I work with my clients and trying to create this grid, this value grid, a friend of mine calls it, of why I matter to you, it's a hard thing to do. That's like step one for us, is to try to figure out, why should people change? Why now? And why with you?
And even deeper than that, and this is where it's not just millennials, it's everybody. I mean, one of the core, sales-specific emotional intelligence skills is empathy, the ability to step into the prospect's shoes. And we run similar, we use a qualification exercise that we have in some of our sales training. And then we ask our salespeople to articulate the customer's problem. Articulate the customer's problem. And they'll make a list of problems, and all the problems are their problems, not their customer problems. Right. And the problems are basically all of the features of their product. And I'm like, that's not the customer's problem. I mean, the customer's problem is deeper than that. The customer's problem is that they just hired Mary Lou as their intern, who's supposed to be getting them Starbucks, but Mary Lou's not getting Starbucks because Mary Lou is going through the invoices that your competitor sent over, because it doesn't make any sense and they don't trust your competitor. That's the problem.
Right.
And so it's for me, it's with it's not millennials specific. It's every salesperson. It's getting out of your own, you know, self-important, kind of self-centric, you know, skin. Yeah. And when you start thinking about value, think about it in terms of what, why it's important to your customer. How does it fit into your customer's language? And, you know, the with millennials, I get that. I mean, I get the span of attention. I mean, my sales trainings have become video games. I mean, I'm literally never stop moving. It never stops moving. Nobody has a moment, because if I don't, I lose them. But my attention span has changed. I mean, I'm consuming information at such a speed that I'm typically, like, I tried to read a newspaper the other day. It goes, I used to love to read the newspaper, and it's too long for me. And I'm like, I can't move it. So, you know, I get all that. But this is why, what I mean, sales has not changed. What the great salespeople always did was understood the emotional context from which their prospect was coming from. And that emotional context changes over time. I mean, we are an evolving society. Things, you know, technology has moved us. But if you don't, and if you don't have the ability or the discipline to get out of your own way and think about your prospect, then it gets very, very hard to deal with them. And if we go back to prospecting, yeah, you know, I totally get millennials love text messaging. I'm 50. I love text messaging. I mean, I'm into text messaging. One of my vendors sent me a text message the other day and said, I noticed something about your business. We can fix it. Here's what it is. I wrote back and said, how much? They said this much. I said, okay, go ahead and do it. That was the entire sales call. Now, they were familiar with me. I knew who they were, right? But that was what I used. Mm-hmm. Later on that day, they called me and said, here's what we're doing. That anchored the trust I felt for them. So the relationships can be fluid across all those channels. Mm-hmm. But if you don't get that it's a relationship, and it starts with the top of the funnel, if you're prospecting email sucks. If you call your prospect and go, hey, how you doing? I mean, how stupid is that? Mm-hmm. That's not a way to start a phone call. You know, if you waste my time, if you don't bring me something, even in your email, that's relevant to me and my business, if you don't connect with me in that way, you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. And this is what I mean by that. You would have failed if you were selling, you know, tools to the Egyptians. I mean, you would have failed then. You're going to fail now.
Right.
It's a different context, but the emotional part of sales has not changed.
Very good. Now, before we go, one of the things I would like you to elaborate on for the audience is the concept of education and training. It's not a set it and forget it. It's not a one-time shot. Tell us about the most successful clients you've had in terms of continual education and how they go about doing that and how you support that through your company.
I'm so glad you asked me. This is one of the messages when I first start working with a client. One of my very first messages is that great companies don't have the courage to train. They have the courage to train the same information over and over and over and over again. Now, this is true for leadership, it's true for customer service, it's true for most customer-facing disciplines within business, because this is a skill position. These skills, these techniques, these dealing with people, these are skills that have to be re-upped on a regular basis. And when you have that mindset that, oh, you know, Mary Lou's been trained, and you expect that the training that you gave Mary Lou is going to sink in and it's going to be, you know, working forever and ever and ever, you are sadly mistaken. It doesn't work that way. And the analogy that I use with companies to help them understand this is like a professional sports team. I mean, just always ask them, who's your favorite NFL team? So imagine if your favorite NFL team, we're moving into August, so they're all practicing right now. They came to camp and had one practice. They went over the playbook once. They went over the plays once. And then the coach said, okay, everybody's trained now. We're good to go. And then they never went to practice again. Imagine that. The coach would be fired. The ESPN would be up in arms. All the people that talk about sports be going crazy, because nobody would do that.
Right.
Well, here's the deal. Salespeople are the elite athletes of the business world. If you don't have those elite athletes working at peak performance, your company will fail. I guarantee it. Because the number one reason why businesses fail is because they run out of customers. Number one reason. So as an organization, it's your job and your role to train your people over and over and over and over and over again. a great example. We're talking about prospecting, filling the top of the funnel. You teach a group of salespeople how to get on the telephone and call. We do this in our training classes. We watch business leaders watch the training class, and they're amazed at what happens over the course of just 3 30-minute dialing blocks.
Yes.
Because people get so much better.
Right.
And then they go out, and for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they're killing it. And then their skills begin to diminish. Why? Because if you're making 30, 40, 50 calls a day, if you're doing that, you're getting reinforcement by the call, the customer, all these other things. You begin to lose that skill. If you're not re-upping that, some of that's the manager. Some of that's online self-directed. Some of that's bringing them back into the classroom. But if you are not constantly doing that, you will fail. You asked me about clients. One of my most successful clients, they have two rules. One, every morning they train. Every morning. Every morning they do a training class. Now, these are 15-minute trainings. They take things that you and I've been talking about. They'll take one part of that and they'll teach that every single day, every day, every day, every day. And this place, they're a rocket ship. It's incredible. Their salespeople are always on. The number two thing, this is the number two rule. And this, by the way, is a rule that I recommend to every single leader. Number two rule, they never, ever, ever get their salespeople together in a room for a meeting or online for a meeting, however they get salespeople, and not train them something, not teach them something. That way, they're always teaching. The most successful clients I have that as a culture. They teach and teach and teach and teach and teach and teach and teach. And I learned that because I worked for a company that we trained the same stuff over and over and over again. And it was an amazing place to work. It was so much fun. It doesn't mean that you can't layer on new ideas and new training. It doesn't mean that. But what it means is that you can't like send someone to a training class and then expect them to be trained. This is not like teaching accountants how to use a bunch of spreadsheets. This is teaching people human relationship skills. And we know how hard it is to deal with other human beings. So when I look at the companies that I work for that were the most fun and the most dynamic, where we had people who we were really building on their talents, these are companies who had the courage to pick a path and teach it over and over and over and over again until it was rote, because they believed and understood that their sales professionals were their elite athletes.
Perfect. Yeah, one of my friends is a sales director at a company in Seattle. And what they do is they have block time every day where they're doing their calls. They take 15 minutes. It seems to be 15 minutes is a number. I don't know if it's just palatable or what, but they do one topic, one objection. They sometimes do writing exercises where they're writing emails, but they do something every day with the team. And if they do a call related warm up, it just gets them ready for their block time. So incorporating it into a daily rhythm isn't a difficult thing. It's just like you said, I love the term you use of, you know, having the courage to do so, because it really will change your life and your revenue.
Absolutely. And if you take that concept of 15 minutes, when I'm working with inside sales teams and working with the managers and supervisors, far too often, in my opinion, the managers and supervisors are separated. Like their offices are over there and the salespeople are over here. Not all of them are configured that way. But with the supervisors and managers inside of an inside sales team, every day, even if you have multiple shifts, you should be doing shift huddles. And for 10, 15 minutes, and inside that huddle, you should bring a training, something that you're teaching. And we supplement this with our clients. We have a really powerful LMS at SalesGravy called SalesGravy University that allows us to create private programs for our clients, so we can create a series of training programs. And most of our clients use the mobile app, because the mobile app is slicker and easier. And there's a lot of video-based training. We keep them down to 2 or 3 minutes. So what a manager can do is they can take one of the modules, show the video, and then have a conversation about it so that people can actualize that. And then, like you said, then they go get on the telephones and they go work, or they go sit with a customer and they work. And if you've got really good leadership team at that point, the leaders are anchoring the training with hands-on coaching. And I'll give you a really nice example of one of my clients who I think just took it to the total next level. They had like most inside sales organizations, they had a quality control group that was listening to calls and going back through, what was happening. And they would sit down with the reps in a coaching, and they would give them all of these things. Like, nobody can deal with everything you did wrong on a call.
Exactly.
So what the leader did, Jen, who's just, I think, one of the the best inside sales leaders I've ever met. She said, this isn't working for us. So we built their training for them. So we customized an entire training suite just for them, spent months with them really understanding their business. And what she did was start taking the modules. We try to build our training in short modules so that managers can then take those later on and use them for their huddles. Mm-hmm. So she took the modules and she said, this week we're focusing on this. And so that's what every manager would focus on. All their little 15-minute get-togethers would be that. And then the quality control people, the only thing they would pay attention to was the thing they were focusing on.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And then they would give the managers feedback on the people they were listening to based on how they were doing against that particular focus. And then the managers were able to use that to really concentrate their coaching. And they just got better and better and better and better. And their reps felt like they weren't getting, you know, pummeled by, hey, you did all these things wrong.
Right.
More, I've got a group of people that are really trying to help me approve a particular skill. And then we're growing to the next one, growing to the next one, growing to the next one. And I recommend that. I've recommended to a number of my clients, and I recommend anybody listening. I never thought about doing it that way. It was a game changer for them.
That's great. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I know we can go on forever because you're just so knowledgeable about so many different things. But to keep it short, be respectful of the people who don't have a lot of time to listen. What's the best way for someone who just is like totally excited about what they heard today and want to connect with you? What's the best way to do that?
So a couple of things you can do. One is you can go to my blog. So I have a personal blog. It's jebblunt.com. Now, Blunt is spelled B-L-O-U-N-T. If you type in B-L-U-N-T, I think you'll find me there. I own that website, but it's B-L-O-U-N-T. It sounds like Blount everywhere else, but in the South where I'm from. So jebblunt.com. There's tons of resources there, videos, blogs, that type of thing. You can also find me on YouTube. So I have a YouTube channel, and you can go to, I think it's Sales Gravy. So at Sales Gravy on YouTube. You can get my Facebook page is Jeb on Demand. That's Jeb on Demand. My personal Facebook is Sales Gravy. Connect with me either way. I'm happy to take you and bring you on. And I post pictures of food and cats. So you know, you can look at that. Twitter, I'm at Sales Gravy. Instagram, I'm at Sales Gravy. I'm Jeb Blunt on LinkedIn, and I'd love to get your LinkedIn connection. And then you can find me on iTunes and on Stitcher and wherever you find podcasts. If you type in my name or type in Sales Gravy Jeb Blunt, you'll find my podcast on those channels. And you can also send me an email if you like. I'm at jeb@salesgravy.com. Send me an email. I answer. Trust me, I just gave out my email address. I get tons of spam. It's okay. And I'm happy to connect with you any way that you want to. And definitely go pick up my book, Fanatical Prospecting.
Yes.
It is the one book that I guarantee that if you read that book, it will make you more money this year.
And for those of you who listened and took to heart what Jeb said about phone calls, I will put his office phone number on this show page where I'll have all these links he just mentioned and other resources that I think would be of value for you to consume. But definitely look him up. I mean, it's just, if you really want to radically change from where you are now to where you could be as a sales professional, Jeb is your guy. For sure.
Thank you. That was very nice of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. And it was great finally connecting with you. And I hope I wish you much success going forward.
Awesome. Thank you.